He says the Jews Perik Hemish and Dalton Dul Perik Hemish Design. The previous Perik listed the many different arguments between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, which don't follow the general pattern of Beis Hillel being more lenient than Beis Shammai, but rather where Beis Shammai is more lenient than Beis Hillel. And in this Perik, we've seen additional opinions that added on to that list. And this Mishnah is really the last one. This Mishnah and the following Mishnah, where Beliezer says, Shnei Dvar Mikul Beis Shammai Mechum Beis Hillel. There are an additional two cases where Beis Shammai is more lenient and Beis Hillel are more strict. The first case is Dam Yoledes Shaloi Tovla, the blood of a woman who has given birth but has not yet been to the mikveh in order to purify herself. A woman who gives birth to a baby son, a baby boy, becomes Tomei for 7 days, after which there are 33 days where any blood which comes out of her uterus, even though in general when that happens she would become a Nida or a Zova, she would get a certain degree of Tumah. During these 33 days, that blood would not make her Tomei at all. And the blood wouldn't be Tomei. And she gave birth to a daughter, then she would be Tomei for 14 days, and the following 66 days, any blood which comes out of her body would not be Tomei or make her Tomei once again. The question is whether this applies, the law that during the 33 or 66 days, the blood which exits her uterus would not be Tomei. Does that apply even if she had not become pure herself after the 7 or 14 days? Or do we say that no, only if she herself became Tohar, do we say that the blood which exits her body is also Tohar? So Beis Shammai hold that mid-Oraisa, even though the woman herself is still Tomei, and she needs to go to the mikveh in order to purify herself, nevertheless, the blood which exits her body during those 33 or 66 days would always be Tohar, even if the woman herself is still Tomei. However, there is a concern that since she has not been to the mikveh and she herself is still Tomei, if we say that any blood which exits her body is Tohar during that 33 or 66 days, even before she has become Tohar by going to the mikveh, then people might come to think that even during the 7 days, or the 14 days where she is Tomei, blood which exits her body then would also be Tahar. Because we see that even though she is Tomei, it doesn't matter. The blood is still Tahar, and they'll think that applies even during the first week or 2 weeks, depending on whether it's a boy or girl. So to avoid that happening, Midrabbanan, as long as the woman is Tomei and has not been to the mikveh, the blood would be Tahar. However, as we saw earlier on in this perek, we now have a different concern, that if the blood is tohar midrabbanan, people might come to burn truma or korban meat, which came in contact with this blood, because that's the halacha when the truma or the korban becomes tomei. But in reality, midoraisa, it's still tohar, and it's forbidden to burn truma or korbanos which are tohar. Midoraisa, and therefore we need to differentiate between this tuma and regular tuma. And therefore, even though the blood which exits her body during the 7 or 14 days where that blood is tomei midoraisa, the halacha is that the blood is tomei and makes things tomei whether it is still wet or even once it is dried. On the other hand, the blood after the 7 or 14 days, which is only tomei midrabbanan, would only be tomei as long as it is wet. But once it is dried, if something touches it, it would not become Tomei. And that way people would have a clear differentiation between this tumor, which is only midrabbanan, and the tumor of the blood which comes out of her body during the first 7 days or 14 days, which is Tomei midoraisa. So we're starting to say, Kurukoch miragreho. It has the status of spit or urine which comes out of her, which is only Tomei as long as it is wet. Or we still, I remember we still say, that midoraisa, as long as the woman has not become Tahar, any blood which exits her body is actually Tomei midoraisa. And therefore, Matamilach v'yavish, it would make things Tomei, whether it is moist and wet, or whether it is dried already. And Mishnah adds, Umoidim b'yodez v'zoiv. Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel agree with a woman who gave birth whilst she was a Zova. A Zova requires 7 days without seeing blood in order for her to become Tahar. And the 7 days after childbirth, or the 14 days after childbirth, where she is Tomei for a different reason, i.e. for giving birth, cannot count towards her 7 days. So both Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel agree that during the 7 days after the original period of 7 or 14 days, during that period where she is a Zova, even though her period of 7 or 14 days is up, and she's already in her 33 or 66 days, since over here there's an additional reason why she's Tomei, and she's not only Tomei because of what she was as having given birth, but she's Tomei because she's a Zova. So in that case, everybody agrees from Tamilach v'Yavish that her blood would make things Tomei, whether it is wet or once it is dried. Mishnah Hey, the second argument which Rabbi Eliezer adds onto the list regards Yibum. The halacha is that if somebody dies without any children, there is a mitzvah on that man's brother to do Yibum, which is to marry the dead man's wife, the widow. Now, even before he has actually done the Yibum and married her, there already exists a halachic connection, which is very similar to marriage. There is a bond called a zikah between the dead man's brother and the dead man's wife. Since they are designated for each other to get married, that bond between them has a halachic significance. And midrabbanan, because that bond is very similar to marriage, just like it's forbidden to marry one's wife's relatives, for example, one's wife's sister, it is also forbidden to marry one's zakuka's relatives. So it would be forbidden for the dead man's brother to marry, for example, the sister of the dead man's wife, even before he's actually married her. Since there is a bond between them, he cannot marry her relatives. And that is the subject of this Mishnah. Rav Achan, if there are four brothers, we'll call them Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda. Two of them, Reuven and Shimon, are married to two sisters. We'll call them Rachel and Leah. And Mason assumed la'achoyos, the brothers who were married to the two sisters died. So Reuven and Shimon died. So again, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda are brothers. Reuven and Shimon married Rachel and Leah. And then they both died together. So Levi and Yehuda both have a mitzvah of Yibum with Rachel and Leah. So mid'oraisa, the law would be that one of them should do Yibum with Rachel. Once he's done that, he's not able to do Yibum with Leah because that's his wife's sister. So the other brother, Yehuda, should do Yibum with Leah. However, midrabbanan, it is forbidden to marry the relatives even of one's zakuka. Again, the zakuka is the woman who is designated for him to do Yibum. So if, let's say, we look at Levi. Levi, right now, has two zakukas. He could do Yibum with two potential women over here. But either one of them are also the sister of his zakuka. Rachel is his zakuka, and Leah is Rachel's sister. And in the same way, Leah is also Levi's zakuka, which means that Rachel is the sister of his zakuka. So midrabbanan, he's not able to do Yibum on either of them, since they are both the relative of a woman who he could potentially do Yibum with. And because of that, they would need to, both Rachel and Leah would need to do a process of chalitza in Beis Din and not do Yibum. Chalitza is a process done in Beis Din which frees the woman from doing Yibum and allows her to marry a different man. Until she's done that, she's not able to marry anyone else. So whenever we can't do Yibum, we would do chalitza instead. And what happens, Vim Kodmu Chonsu, if one of the brothers, let's say Levi, went ahead and did Yibum, he got married to Rachel. So he violated this prohibition with Midrabbanan of marrying one, the relative of one's zakuka. So as the Mishnah Yetziu, they would need to get divorced since they got married in a prohibited way, even though it was prohibited only Midrabbanan. Midrabbanan, they also need to get divorced. However, Rabbi Eliezer says in the name of Beis Shammai that Yekaimu, they can remain married. It's only over Beis Hillel who say that Yetziu, they would need to get divorced. But Beis Shammai hold that once they are married, they are able to remain married. Since the prohibition was only Midrabbanan, and as well as that, once they're married, there's not really any prohibition anymore. Because the Yibum is ultimately valid, they're now considered to be married. And once he's done Yibum on one of the sisters, there's no longer any mitzvah of Yibum at all on the other sister. Which means that the other sister stops being a zakuka. So the sister that he did Yibum with is no longer the relative of his zakuka. So there's no longer a prohibition. The only question is, since when he did the Yibum, it was forbidden to do, do we punish him and say that he needs to divorce her? So according to Beis Shammai, we don't punish them. According to Beis Hillel, we do punish them and force them to get divorced. And we've now reached the end of that long, long list of arguments all throughout Shas, throughout many different topics, where Beis Shammai is more lenient than Beis Hillel. And now the Mishnah is going to resume the various testimonies given by different Tanoim, also of quite random halachas. Mishnah Vov, Akava ben Mahalalel, Heidah Rod Vorim, Akava ben Mahalalel testified four different things. And Omuloi, the other Chachomim, said to Akava ben Mahalalel, Akavya, chazor b'ch b'arbar d'vorim sh'isa oimer. Retract from these four things which you hold, which are against what the majority of Chachomim hold. V'nascho av beis din l'Yisrael, and if you do that, we'll make you into the av beis din, who is effectively the vice head. He's the second most senior position of the Sanhedrin for Klal Yisrael. Amar lahen, he said to them, Mutavri le'koi shayti kol yomai. It's better for me to be called a fool for my entire life, and not to be considered a rosha for one moment in front of Hashem. That in order to receive this important, well-respected position, I changed my view on a halachic matter. And in addition to that, even if it's true that I would retract, even if it's true that I'll think very deeply about it and I'll come to the conclusion that you're actually right, I still wouldn't do that and accept the position. Shalayu Oimrim, so that other people wouldn't say Bishul Sarara Chazarbai, that he retracted from his positions only in order to get this well-respected position of being Av Beis Din. That's why he changed his opinion. So even if it's true that I would change my opinion, I wouldn't do it because it would look like I'm doing it for the wrong reason, and that would be a big chilul Hashem. Now, what exactly were these four things that he testified? Number one, hu hayom tamei sa'ar pekuda. He would say that the sa'ar pekuda is tomei. This refers to a case of tzara'as, where somebody gets certain spots on his body which would make him tomei. And the process which was done is that somebody would show it to a kohen, and the kohen would tell him to go back and come back a few days later, usually 7 days later. And he would come back, and if there was particular signs on the tzara'as, for example, if white hairs grew on that spot, then that would confirm that indeed this is tzara'as, and the kohen would pronounce this person tomei. Now, everybody agrees that if there were white hairs in that area, and then the tzara'as came, and there was a spot on that area, so the white hairs would not be a sign of tzara'as. It's only if there was tzara'as there already, there was this spot, and then the white hairs arrived. Now, the case of sa'ar pekuda is where somebody has had a spot of tzara'as, and then there were white hairs which grew afterwards, so that's good, the white hairs came after the tzara'as. But then the actual tzara'as spot disappeared, and later on came back. But the second spot of tzara'as came after the hairs were already white. Nevertheless, according to Akadma Mahalalel, it would be considered tzara'as and it would be tomei, because the original tzara'as was there before the white hairs, and that is good enough according to Akadma Mahalalel. Right, number two, he also said that v'dam hayoroik, yellow blood, which comes out of a woman's body, is tomei, even though the Mishnah Maseches Nidah says that it needs to be red. Akadma Mahalalel says that we suspect that it was red, but after a while it turned yellow. Even the yoroik literally means green often. Over here, it refers more to a yellowish blood. And according to Akadma Mahalalel, we suspect that it is tomei because it was once red originally, v'chomotarin, but in both these cases, the Chachom hold that it would be tahar. Number three, the law is that when a kosher animal gives birth to its firstborn child, that needs to be given to a kohen. And if the animal is fit to be brought as a korban, then the kohen will need to bring it as a korban. However, if it has a wound which invalidates it from being a korban, then the kohen can slaughter it like a regular animal and eat it. Now, it is forbidden to work the animal or to shear the animal. It's really forbidden to benefit from the animal in any way except for slaughtering it and eating it. Now, once you slaughter it, you're then able to benefit even from the wool of the animal. Well, until you've slaughtered it and made it fitting to be eaten, one cannot benefit from the wool of the animal. Question is, if wool came off the animal before it was slaughtered and then he slaughtered the animal, does the slaughtering permit the wool which was already off the animal at the time of the slaughtering? So according to Akadma Mahalalel, Huya Matis Arbuchar Baal Mum Shanoshar, he permitted the wool of a firstborn animal which had a wound on it, and the wool came off the Nichu Bachaloin, and he placed it on some sort of window, the Arakach Shchotai, and then he slaughtered it. According to Akadma Mahalalel, the slaughtering permits even the wool which came off beforehand. Now even Akadma Mahalalel agrees that if he had himself cut the wool off, then even once he slaughters it, it will be forbidden. But we're talking about a case where the wool came off by itself. According to Akadma Mahalalel, the slaughtering would permit that wool for him to benefit from it. V'chom eisim, but the chachomim forbid one to benefit from that wool. This is midrash bonon, in order to discourage people from leaving the bechor for a long time, in order that it will grow lots of wool. We don't want you to leave it for a long time because you might come to cutting the wool off yourself, or to use the animal in a different way. And it's only permitted to slaughter the animal and eat it. Once you've slaughtered it, you can then benefit from the other parts of the animal, like the wool. But we want you to slaughter it immediately, and therefore midrabanan, it would be forbidden to benefit from this wool, so that people won't end up leaving the animal for a long time, so that it grows a lot of wool. Right, and fourthly, this one refers to the laws of a saita. A saita is a woman who is married, and her husband suspects her of having committed adultery and had relations with another man. So he would take her to the Beit HaMikdash, where the kohen would give her a special solution of water, into which the name of Hashem on a piece of parchment was dissolved, and she would drink that water, and if indeed she was guilty, she would end up blowing up and dying. Her stomach would bloat a lot until she died. So Hu Ya'imer, Akadma Mahalalel would say, in Mashkin Lois HaGiyoyres, we never give these soita waters, this solution, to a woman who had converted. She wasn't born Jewish. V'lois shifcha meshuchheres, nor to a non-Jewish maidservant who had been freed. And when she is freed, she converts to become Jewish. And he learns this from Pesukim, which talk about Bnei Yisrael, the sons of Israel, which teaches that that the woman needs to be descended from Jewish ancestors who came from Yaakov, who was called Yisrael. The point is, he learns from Pesukim that this would not apply to a convert, but the Chachom say they learn the Pesukim differently, and according to the Chacham in Mashkin, we would give this water even to a woman who did not come from Jewish ancestors. Omulay, the Chacham said to Akavya, Maisa b'Charkamis, there was a story which once happened with a woman called Charkamis, and she was Shivcha Meshuchreres Shais b'Yerushalayim. She was a non-Jewish maidservant who had been freed and converted, and she was in Yerushalayim, and she became a Saita v'Hishkua Shmaya Avtalyain. And Shmaya and Avtalyain, two great Tanoim, gave her the Saita water to drink. So we see that even a woman who converted would drink the Saita water. Amar Lahem, Akavya said to them, Dugma Hishkua. They gave her the water as an example, meaning they wanted to show that converts are considered to be a real part of the Jewish people, and that's why they did it. But the truth is that halachically, I am right, and we do not generally give a convert the Saita water, and they shouldn't have done so. Why do they want to show that converts are considered a real part of the Jewish people? Because they themselves were converts. Now, this statement is quite a bold statement, which is very disrespectful towards Shmaya and Avtalyain. And because of that, the other Chachomim v'niduhu, they put Akiva ben Mahalalel in Cheirem. They excommunicated him and decreed that nobody could have any contact with him. This is a very severe punishment because of the disrespect which he showed towards Shmaya and Avtalyain. And for the rest of his life, he was in this Cheirem, Umeis ben Iduyoy. He died whilst still in this Nidoy, this Cheirem, under ban, the Sokru Basin of Saronoi, which literally means the Beis Din stoned his coffin, but it really means they placed a stone on his coffin as a symbolic act because of the severity of what he said. Now, Omar Rehuda said, Chas v'shalom sh'akavan isnado. God forbid to say that Akavim Mahalalel was put in Cheirem and that this happened. He was such a great man that he definitely couldn't have said such a thing about Shmaya and Avtalyain. But according to others, he did say it, but it couldn't be that the Chachomim put him in Cheirem. Because Sheina Zorin and Nedas Vifnei Kol Adam Yisrael, the courtyard of the Beis Hamikdash wasn't locked, holding all of the Jewish people. This happened on Pesach, when everybody came to the Beis Hamikdash to bring the Korban Pesach. So the Jewish people were split into three groups, and one at a time they entered into the courtyard of the Beis Hamikdash. So you had throngs and throngs of people there, and there was nobody there but Chochma v'Yaschet, in wisdom or in fear of sin. Like a Kalev Mahalalel, he was such a great man. Nobody was greater than him. Of course, he didn't reach the situation where he was put in Cheirem. This mean they do, rather, who did they put in Cheirem? Eliezer ben Chanoich, Shapikvik with Tais Rodayim, who sort of doubted and disparaged the Midrash Rabbanon law that in certain situations one's hands can become Tomei, whilst the rest of his body remains Tohar. This unique halacha, which is very unusual in the area of Tumah, only part of one's body to become Tomei, he was very disparaging of this halacha. Because of that, they put him in Cheirem, and he died whilst he was still in Cheirem. When he died, the Beis Din sent a messenger to put a stone on his coffin. And that was this symbolic act. This teaches us that anybody who is put in Cheirem, he's put under ban, that people can't have contact with him. And he dies while still under Cheirem. They would place a stone on his coffin. Right, Mishnah Zion, we continue to be a bit sidetracked, and the story continues. B'shashmi Sosai, at the time of Akalim Mahalalel's death, Omar Livnoi, he said to his son, Bani, my son, Chazor Boch Barabod Vorm Shoyisi Omer. I want you to retract from the four things which I would say and argue against the other Chachomim. Omar Loi, the son said to him, V'lo Loi Chazor Boch, why didn't you yourself retract from these four things? Omar Loi, Akalim said to his son, Ani Shomatim Piyam Rubim. I heard the laws which I stated from the mouth of the majority. It could be that in number, maybe I was outnumbered, but I heard this from great Chachomim, great Tanoim, my teachers, and in my eyes, they were considered to be the majority. Perhaps not in number, but in wisdom, yes. The Haim Shom and Piyam and Rubim. Whereas the other Tanoim who I argued against, they also heard from the majority, and they were the majority in number. And therefore, Anil Madhisi Bishmuasi, I remained with my opinion, Vehim Amdu Bishmuasan, and they remained with their opinions. Avon Atosh Madhim Piyayochid. But you, my son, only heard from one individual, me. This side of the argument, from a piyama rubin, whereas you heard a different side of the argument from the majority of people. Mutov lahaniach divya yochid v'leachiz divya rubin, and it would be better for you to leave the words of an individual who is recording an opinion who he heard from great people, but rather you should hold on to the opinion of the majority of the chachomim who argued against me. Omaloi, at that point, his son said to him, Abba, my father, pakedo alecha v'recha. Can you put in a good word for your friends, for the al chachomim, that when I come to now change my opinion to go according to them, they will accept me, and they won't reject me due to you having argued against them for so long? A kavya said to his son, I'm not going to put in a good word for you. His son said to him, perhaps there is a particular bad reason that you found in me that you don't view me worthy. A kavya said to him, love, no, that's not the reason. But I don't want to put in a good word for you because ma'asecha yikarvucha. Your own good deeds will bring you near to them and they'll want to be close to you if you act correctly. And your deeds, if you don't act correctly, will distance yourself from them and they won't be close to you. But either way, it will be the right thing because if you are indeed worthy and you are a tzaddik, then they'll be close to you. And if not, they won't be close to you, but that would be the right thing if they are indeed not close to you as a result of you being and behaving in an incorrect manner.